Nathan Hubbard. Spring has sprung, the birds are chirping, and the pop girls are pop girling.
Nora Princiati, the pop girls are girling. What does that even mean? You wrote this trailer. I do not talk like this, Nora.
But I try so hard to teach you.
Well, here's what I do know. This spring is packed with new releases from some of the biggest pop stars in the world, including our girl, Taylor Swift.
And every single album is back to cover it all.
We'll, of course, break down every angle on the Tortured Poets Department, out April 19th. But we'll also cover new music from Beyonce, Dua Lipa, Maggie Rogers, Kacey Musgraves, Ariana Grande, and whoever else just might surprise us this spring.
It's Pop Girl Spring on every single album.
New episodes starting March 28th, just in time for Cowboy Carter, up through Dua Lipa's Radical Optimism in May.
So subscribe to every single album on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
And welcome to another episode of Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we have one of my social media heroes, and he's actually one of the best authors that I know. And I know that may sound like hyperbole, but I think most people, when I say his name, will say, yeah, well, Bakari, you're probably telling the truth. We have none other than Don Winslow with us. How you feeling today?
I'm good, man. Thanks very much for having me. I'm also a reader of yours and a fan. My son gives me your books for Father's Day presents. There we go.
I will take that. I appreciate it. We start each one of our shows by having our guests walk us through the arc of their careers. And you've been a writer. So talk to us about the formative experiences you had growing up where you first realized that writing could be a profession for you.
Oh, man. You know, I think I was about 6 years old. My dad was a sailor and a bibliophile, real, you know, reader. My mom was a librarian, so there were always books around the house. It's funny, our two siblings in our family, we both became professional novelists. My sister published like 42 romance novels and, you know,
wow.
26 books, I think. So this is what I've always wanted to do, Bakari. Now the world took a long time to agree with that, right? You know, but I've wanted to do it forever.
Man, that's amazing. So who's the better writer?
Tough to say. I don't want to start a sibling rivalry here. My sister's pretty good, you know, pretty skilled.
I think she would actually say her. I mean, I don't think.
Yeah. I think you're right.
That's pretty cool. Before we talk about City of Ruins, I'm interested in understanding your creative process for a novel because you've now written, and I want to get this right. Is it 22 novels?
I think it's more like 26, but you know what? And I'm not being coy with you. I'm not sure I know. I kind of don't count, you know?
but your first 15 weren't New York Times bestsellers.
No, and, sir. And
since then, you've had 7 consecutive New York Times bestsellers. Are those stats right? I did the research, but I want to be sure to get your New York Times bestsellers right.
I think you've got that right. Yeah.
All right. Was there any difference in your creative process between the ones that weren't and the ones that are? And what do you think led to that first book becoming a bestseller? Like, what, why do you think audiences received it differently?
You know, prior to that, I was in this sort of spin cycle, right, where publishers would say, well, you're not a best-selling author, so we're not going to print a lot of books. Well, they can't sell books they don't print. And so you're in that catch-22 cycle. Then, you know, my good buddy, Shane Salerno, became my agent. And he really turned things around. You know, he got tough with publishers and with movie people and just said, look, you got to pay this guy. You got to print more books. And that's what we did. And that's really, to be just brutally honest with you, how it turned around.
My agent was great. Shout out to Paul Fedorka. And tell me, what do you just gave a great anecdote. A lot of people ask me about writing books, but talk about the import of having a strong, very good agent in this process.
Oh, it's everything, man. It's everything. You know, prior to that, again, I was just stuck. I was just sort of on this plateau, and not a very high plateau at that, you know, more of a sort of a mesa in the desert landscape. And, you know, Shane, who's an A-list screenwriter in his own right, you know, wrote little movies like Armageddon and the sequels to Avatar. Little indie films, art house films. And I was his first client. You know, we were buddies and we'd talk and he'd be giving me advice about Hollywood and stuff. And then one day we said, oh, let's just make it formal. And so I was the crash test dummy, you know, for what became the Story Factory.
So he wasn't an agent. He just knew.
No, he learned on the job. You know, it was OJT for the both of us. And you know what? We've never had a contract. I don't even think we had a handshake. I just think we said, let's do this. And, you know, here's how we're going to do it. And it's been that level of trust. You know,
you specialize in prom novels. What is it about that particular type of novel that does it for you?
I like to reside professionally in the zone that Mr. Springsteen called the darkness on the edge of town. That's more interesting to me. I'm not very interested in the beautiful people. I'm interested in people on the edge, people in struggle. I think that crime novels show humanity in extremis. Yeah. And that to me is interesting. And plus, I just love the writing. When I go back and look at the people who came before me, you know, people that I revere, you know, the Raymond Chandlers and Lawrence Blocks and Elmore Leonards. I loved the poetry of their writing and tried to emulate that.
You've done more than emulate. You've created your own lane here. Let's talk about politics before we get into your newest book. You've been a consistent voice against Donald Trump. We've rarely seen authors go outside of their work to make the kind of political statements and spend your own money and resources and talent and treasure in doing it. How are you engaging with voters in 2024 to make sure that President Biden is reelected? And if I was talking to President Biden later today,
yeah,
what would you want me to tell him that you said to do more of?
Well, I think he's starting to do it. Talk tough. Get tough, get honest. Now, listen, please tell him that I'm a big admirer and a big fan. And I believe he saved this country, you know, in 2020. I really do. So please give him my respect and regards. I would like all of the Democratic Party to just start telling plain truths and in plain language. And let's not be so polite and so nice. I think we always want to be so nice. And the people that we're fighting against aren't nice. They're not going to respect that. They're not going to respond to that. And so I tried, you know, and I'm on what's now X and commenting pretty much every day. And then Shane and I have done these videos, you know.
Videos are amazing, too.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I mean, to my shock, they've had over 300 million views, which is kind of incredible. And so we'll keep on keeping on, you know, to reach people. And I think we'll intensify that both in content and number as we get closer to the election.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Let's talk City in Ruins. What is it about and why did you write this particular book?
This is the third in a trilogy of books that tried to take the Greek and Roman classics, the Aeneid, the Odyssey, the Iliad, and create, though, a fully contemporary crime epic that you could read with no reference to the classics at all, which, in fact, is how most people have read it, but that still takes from those great themes and characters and stories. You know, I think when I look at my beloved crime fiction genre, and I'm very much a crime fiction writer, right? I embrace being a genre writer.
Do you read it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Who are some of the authors that you read?
Well, you know, like right now, Lou Burney has a new book out. I read him, Adrian McKinty, TJ Newman. There's so many great people coming up, great young talent, you know. So a lot of folks. And then, you know, I go back again to sort of the classics. And so with this book is the culmination of that trilogy and trying to end that cycle, you know, in a satisfying way.
When you write a trilogy like this, how do you plot it out? I mean, you don't just write one complete book in your mind, do you? Or do you just kind of outline all three? How does that work?
I don't outline at all, ever, because I want to be open to the possibility of surprises. Mm. You know, I think if I'm surprised, the reader's going to be surprised.
That's a fact.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, you know. But of course, I had an arc because I was following the life of Aeneas, you know, who's a minor player in the Trojan War. And then, you know, in mythology goes on to found the empire that becomes Rome. And so I had an overall arc for his life. But then I had to modernize it to this guy, Danny Ryan. You know, who could he be starting in America in the 1980s and going into the late 1990s? What were the contemporary equivalents? And that was why it took me 30 years to write this thing, you know.
What were your real life inspirations for City in Ruins? Did you have anything you pointed to?
Sure. Look, you know, I grew up in the era of the New England crime wars, you know, when the Irish and Italian mobs were going at each other and then different Italian mobs were going at each other. So that was a background not only to these books, but to my life. In this book, I was looking at the era in Las Vegas when the mob is just about faded out and corporate America is taking over, you know, and they're building those mega casinos for $1 billion. And that was fascinating to me. So, you know, I looked at some of those guys, you know, who built those casinos and what was happening in that era and how they got their money and what was going on. So Vegas is just fun to write about, right?
And there are a lot of secrets that are still being told.
Yes, there are.
Out there in Las Vegas. People often ask me this all the time, and I'm going through this, so let's just act like nobody's listening.
All right.
When you have a book that is going through iterations, both my children's book and adult book, my first one, are going through iterations of different scripts and Bibles and eyes that are looking at them in Hollywood. How do you navigate that process? Because you've done it extremely well.
Well, thank you. First of all, I think I had to come to a realization that books and film or TV are two different breeds of cat, you know, with two different sets of needs. And, you know, the book is horizontal and it's not temporal. People can put it up and set it down, pick it up and set it down, where that film is vertical and 30 feet high and in bright colors, and it requires compression. So I had to be realistic and know, you know, that the changes were going to have to be made. At the same time, I want them to retain the core of the story and even more importantly, the core of the characters. And if they're going to make changes, then I want to hear the reasons for them. Mm. So typically they'll send me the scripts. I'll read the scripts. I'll send back notes. you know, which very often are heated and sometimes are not, as I'm sure you know. And then we just negotiate. I'm a big believer in the battleground of ideas. You know, if everyone can just check their egos at the door, and then let's come in and debate it and discuss it and let the best idea prevail.
Do you have a favorite? I know that's like asking about a favorite child, but do you have a favorite book, movie, any of those things that you've written, anything that's near and dear to your heart?
You know, it is like, you know, distinguish between your children. Although I only have one kid, but, you know, you're always fond of your first book, you know, because it was your first. There was a book called The Cartel, which was so difficult to write.
It's a legendary book, though.
That, you know, I have a fondness for that. And then this trilogy, you know, as I said, it took me 30 years. And for a lot of those 30 years, Bakari, I doubted I could pull it off. You know, I didn't think I had the talent to do it. And I was probably right, by the way, until, you know, maybe the last few years.
Why did it take you 30 years? Like, who's your audience for this book and how much of their reactions to prior books shaped your creative process? Is that what took you so long to understand where the audience was?
No. You know, I got to be honest with you. I don't think much about the audience until I'm in the very late drafts of books. In the early drafts, all I'm thinking about is interesting myself and entertaining myself and trying to write well. In the late drafts, then all I'm thinking about is the readership. So I wasn't thinking about audience. What was difficult was trying to take these ancient stories and make them fully modern and fully human. And some of the characters in these stories and these books are based on gods and goddesses. How do you make them contemporary and human and not just, you know, symbolic characters that would, I think, be quite dull, you know? And so that was the challenge. And it took me a while to figure it out. You know, what kind of empire could Danny Ryan build in 1990s America? Took me a long time, embarrassingly, to figure out Las Vegas, where you can build anything you want if you have the bucks, right? If you have the cash, go ahead and build Rome. They did it, right? Caesar's Palace.
Oh, Caesar's Palace, yeah.
Yeah, you know, build Paris, build a pirate ship or a pyramid or whatever it is that you want. And once I figured that out, then I was kind of on my way, but it took me some time. And, you know, again, I was writing some other books in the meantime, right? You know, Cartel and Power of the Dog, and yeah.
And Savages?
Savages.
Great, 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 great movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to read the book. How closely paralleled is it to the book?
Very close, very close.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, he must be high when he's writing this, because this is amazing.
I swear I was not, but if you look at the first chapter, which is quite short, it's two words. The second word is you, and the first word isn't. I will keep your show PG. You might think I was, but I wasn't.
I ask this question of all my authors, from Cicely Tyson now to Don Winslow, but you've written quite a few books, but what was different about this writing process in City of Ruins? Even more importantly, how did writing this book or the trilogy of this book change you, if at all?
Yeah, I think a lot. First of all, when I'm writing City of Ruins, I'm aware that it's my last novel. And so as I was going into the home stretch, you know, coming around the last curve, and you can, you know, as you're typing, you kind of see the end of the book coming up. Not only is it the end of a novel, it's the end of my fiction career. You know, I think that because of what was happening in my life and what was happening in the country, I think this is maybe my most compassionate book toward the characters. You know, I wrote it during COVID. I was writing it when my mom died and we couldn't go, you know, you couldn't travel, the country had shut down, and, you know, there wasn't even a funeral. And so I think that it changed me in that way. It was also a homecoming. You know, I left Rhode Island, where a lot of the book is set, when I was 17, and sort of wandered the world for decades trying to find a little stability and a little success, which was a long time coming. And this book kind of brought me home again. And I started to love that place again and find a love for the people there that maybe I'd lost along the way, you know. So, yeah, quite a bit, I think.
Why your last novel?
Couple of things. I mean, this felt like the end. It felt like this was a 30-year project that I dreamed of doing and again doubted for a long time my ability to do. And so achieving it felt big to me and felt like an end. And also, you know, what's happening in America? Can't wait. You know, I think that now my energies are probably better spent in a fight against what I consider to be a neo-fascist movement in this country. And that response doesn't lend itself to a novel. By the time I would write a novel about these issues, the fight's over. You know, I don't want to write the elegy on American democracy.
You know, I do feel like there is a book you can write about this era and this bombastic fascist person who comes from fraudulent backgrounds and becomes right. president of the United States. I don't know if anybody would believe it, but, you know, you can write it.
No, you can write it. Listen, there's doubtless a great book to be written about this, right? You wish Thomas Wolfe would write it, really. But but again, the era that we live in, it demands a quicker response to these things.
Sure.
You know, a daily kind of response. And that's what I'm involved in doing.
So when will the book be available? How can people buy it? I can't even get the word out.
Yeah, thank you for asking. Buy it anywhere. You know, it's in bookstores everywhere. It's, you know, you buy it online. I don't know, meet me in the parking lot and I'll sell you one.
Nice. You got one in the trunk.
Yeah, I've got a bunch in the trunk. I'll sell them to you at a discount, you know. See me at, you know, In-N-Out Burger or something, just to ask. Seriously, they can get it anywhere. Buy it anywhere. It's in bookstores everywhere. And it's, you know.
Are these trilogies going to the screen?
They are. Thanks again for asking. Austin Butler of Elvis and Masters of the Air and Dune 2 is playing Danny, and good guy. I mean, obviously great actor, but good guy, down to earth, smart guy. So I'm really pleased about it.
Do you have like a input on who plays the characters, or they just say this person is playing them, go meet the writer?
Yeah, I very often do have input. But in this case, you know, Shane called up and said, hey, Austin Butler wants to do this. And I said, great. You know, thanks very much. You know, that was my input was, yeah, good news. Thanks.
All right. My last question for you. How can people find and follow you on social media? And how can they follow all the digital work that you and Shane are doing?
Yeah.
Fascism.
Don Winslow on, I guess it's now X and not Twitter. You can go to my website or, you know, just Google me and type in Don Winslow videos and they'll pop up.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing that we have to utilize this site that's run by Elon Musk.
Yeah, I know.
It's just,
listen, man, you got to fight the fight where the fight is.
I tell people that.
Right.
And that all the time. You got to meet people where they are.
Yeah. And sometimes the fight's in an alley. You don't necessarily like the alley, but that's where the fight is. And still the idea is to win the fight, right?
That's right. Don Winslow, thank you for joining the Bukhari Sellers podcast. Everybody go out and buy City in Ruins. And if you wanted to have a special Christmas gift for somebody you love, just buy all his books and just put them in the tree. I think they would love it. And also go watch Savages. It's one of the most entertaining movies you can find. And it's after one of Don Winslow's books. Thank you so much. Okay. Have a blessed day.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Be well.